Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Jaguars This Week. Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
And Tony Baselli.
Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman.
And Tony Baselli.
And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher.
And Tony Baselli.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, Loggy, I guess we just have a transient show now. It's kind of like baseball broadcasters. You know, they get up and they go from the TV booth after a couple innings to the radio booth.
Right, right.
And the radio guys. You know, here comes Baselli just wandering in. You know,
taking a sweet old time.
He may get up and go over to the coach's suite after a while. Osh may come in, he may not. Yeah.
Just leave his microphone off.
We're talking about how the show kind of has a loosey-goosey feel to it. But it's good to see you.
Well, it's good to be here. I was actually going to be right on time. I've been here for a while, but I went down as I was walking to get a little beverage, a Diet Pepsi.
Diet, okay.
Yeah, you need the Diet Pepsi for sure.
Badly. It's the peanuts.
I was just about to say, you know how much fat's in these peanuts? How many calories in that?
Listen, sorry, body by Brian.
Yeah, right, whatever.
I saw Mel Tucker, so I stopped and talked to Mel for a while. And
how's he?
Wheels.
Wheels.
I feel bad for our guy, man.
Is he on crutches or is he?
He's on crutches, but he's riding
both.
A scooter around.
Yeah, he's got one of those little motorized scooters.
Yeah,
and they've been kind of using that to, you know, where he has to go a long way on flat ground. Then of course after a while, you know, you've got to get on the crutches. So he's using both.
Six to eight weeks.
On crutches.
Well,
he was telling me.
Yeah, you're looking at like a 4-month rehabilitation process that he's going to have to go through after having his basically quad reattached.
Yeah, but you're even 4 months from now, you're not 100%.
No, he's not going to be 100%.
Now, Leon Searcy never really got back, did he?
Well, I don't think he needs to get that level. I give
Mel credit. I mean, holy cow, last week, you know, he had surgery, I think the latter part of the week, and then you know, coached a game on Sunday, and I can't imagine trying to do that after a major surgery. And I give him credit. You know,
well, I just had a major surgery. I had my hip replaced, and 3 days later, did you say?
Two or three. Yeah,
I was just getting out of the hospital, and I was so drugged up, there wasn't a chance I would have known the difference between cover two or cover three.
Yeah, I mean, kudos to Mel.
Talk about a stud.
Good football
toughness.
Coach. Good football. John Osher is here. Hey, John.
Hey, Ryan.
You know our show starts at 6:07.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. Well, Wednesdays are busy around Jaguars.com.
You bet.
Yeah, you're getting your workout in. Don't tell it. Don't lie.
As part of what makes it busy.
Oh, exactly.
All right, folks. Tuesday, October the 11th. That's next Tuesday. RPM Automotive invites you to their new Northside location at 13131 Wolf Bay Drive to have cookies with the Jaguars rookies. They'll be there from 3 to 5 signing autographs and sharing cookies with you and your kid. That's the new Northside RPM Automotive, 13131 Wolf Bay Drive up on the north side. Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Baselli, John Osher, Joe Fortunato. Are you paying attention to us tonight, or has that Phillies game got your attention?
I'm sorry, are you talking to me?
Yeah, exactly. Now we know what we have to deal with. So I may have to go answer the phones, Logs. You may have to be over here driving the boat.
Go Cardinals.
If Joe slacks off,
Jeff should be answering
the
phones because he's the one. Yeah, it's his phone.
Yeah, it's my phone.
Oh, he's got the phone. We'll take the Twitter. You take the phone. Oh, but at Tony Baselli, at John Osher, at Jags Boys. All right, so where do you want to start tonight? There's just such a wealth of information.
Is Tony angry tonight again?
No, he's not angry tonight.
I'm frustrated.
Okay.
I am frustrated.
All right, but we do have to come back to the conversation we had last week, and that is airing it out.
Because that's going to get me mad.
42.
Let's not go there. Let's start on something positive tonight.
All right.
Last week was, and I got some thoughts about the airing it out. And the
all right, well, then be positive. Start with something positive.
Do you want to start offensively or defensively? Because I thought defensively.
I think since we were talking about Mel Tucker, we should go with the defense.
Let's go with defense. Overall, very positive, in my opinion. I was surprised they didn't play the run as well as they should have. I think if you watch the film, there's some guys not keeping gap integrity, Jeff. I mean, you'd probably be better to speak that than me on the run. But the overall scheme and the game plan against that team I thought was outstanding. I thought we got turnovers when we needed to. We forced them to kick field goals in the red zone. And if you're making that team kick field goals instead of score touchdowns, you have a chance to win. And our defense gave us a chance to win that ball game. And I think Mel Tucker and his staff had a great plan. I thought the players, for the most part, executed it. I was pleased defensively.
Yeah, it was solid. I mean, I wouldn't say it was good. You know, when you give up over 500 yards, that's not good.
Jeff, when you hold a team who's averaging 35 points a game, 23.
I get that part of it.
Sometimes you just
and got – keeping them in it and everything. I get that. But, I mean, you still gave up 177 on the ground.
I did say that. I agree there.
And over 500. And hey, look, you know, good is winning, okay? And so I can't say anything's good unless you get a W, because ultimately that's what defines good. Is winning, and it didn't happen.
When you're talking about the defense, I made this point last week. I don't know that this defense, when it was put together in training camp, if anybody realistically thought it was going to be a top three defense all year.
Top 10.
But it was put together to be very, very good against the OK teams and to get it done enough for the offense to win against the really good teams. And I thought on Sunday the defense did what it was put together to do. It stayed around. And if the offense had produced in, you know, most people would call an average fashion, it's a competitive game.
Guys, how many teams are going to hold the New Orleans Saints 23 points this year?
Right. I mean, I agree with Jeff.
I don't know of any.
It wasn't good.
Yeah, but I mean, but it was. But when you start saying enough. That things are good when you don't win and you allow more points than the opponent.
Jeff, I'm trying to be positive because if I go to the place where I want to go
I know where you want to go. But I'm just saying is that, you know, I think from their standpoint, you can't say we feel good about it. You know, yeah, you feel good about the points, and yeah, you feel good about getting three sacks
stands.
And, you know, the red zones, and they're kicking field goals, and you got
a couple takeaways.
And
I'm going to run over him.
You know, you like to have seen Darryl do a little bit more there. You know, but there
great
was some,
break on the ball, by the way.
There
were
some weaknesses on that defense that have got to be cleaned up. And Clint Sessions got to be better.
He didn't play very well.
He did not play very well. And I know that's probably not easy for a guy to kind of really feel a groove when he's not playing as much, because New Orleans was playing a lot of spread, and you know when they're in spread, you know you're matching up with nickel. You know,
I'll tell you,
so
who did play great as a free agent is Paul Posluszny.
He's been so good all year long, if he could just take his coverage up and just a little notch.
Jeff, how many middle linebackers are really good in coverage? How many?
Well, I mean, Ray Lewis
still
gets it done.
No,
Ray still gets it done.
Jeff, I've done Ray's games. Mm-hmm. I did a game this year. Ray cannot run.
Well, Ray can't run, no. but I mean, Tony, when Ray was in his heyday, Ray was one of the best.
Yeah, but he's maybe the best linebacker ever
played. I know. I'm talking about Tony. I'm talking about Paul Posluszny being one of the elite middle linebackers, and he has to do that.
He is one of the better middle linebackers. He's one of the best middle linebackers in football. My point is not a lot of middle linebackers run in coverage with the top-end tight end.
But Paul can. Paul has those abilities to run. He's one of the fastest linebacker in the game. He can do that. And if he gets that just up a notch, we're talking all pro.
There was one or two plays, though, on Sunday where you were talking about him being in coverage and being better.
Mm-hmm.
So are you seeing him get better?
He's getting much better. You know, and all that is, it's not so much a physical thing. It's an awareness thing. You know, knowing how to play routes, anticipating where you need to be,
Jeff,
anticipating what the offense wants to do.
Was he not asked to do that in Buffalo or not coached very well as far as coverage end of it?
I think playing linebacker is very similar to playing quarterback when you're talking about coverage, and that you've got to learn the game and learn what offenses are trying to accomplish to really understand where you need to be. Ed Reed is one of the best in the world at it, not because Ed does his job. Ed cheats a lot. You know, not when I say cheat, you've got to anticipate. You've got to lean one way or another. And Paul Posluszny, when he learns that, when he acquires that, and remember, he's been hurt a lot and early on in his career. So a lot of times he was more worried about taking care of his job and his responsibility and rehab instead of learning the finer points of the game. And when he gets that, he's going to be phenomenal, because right now he's really good.
Well, and I think what you're talking about too, Jeff, it's not like a lot of the emails I get are, boy, this guy's horrendous in coverage. And I think the point you're making is that's not true. It's an inch or two of an improvement, not yards.
Yeah, he's good in coverage, but when he gets a little bit better, he's going to be lights out.
The only reason they say he's horrendous too is because early in the season, is during the preseason, he had that Aaron Hernandez game where he looked silly early against one of the most athletic tight ends in football.
Nine days after he got to the team.
So that's hung on him unfairly.
All right, we take a break. Fans, you can text BBQ to 72239 and enter for a chance to win the Sonny's Game Ball Delivery Contest. You can end the game ball to the ref at the start of the next Jaguars home game. More to come on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it. Become a part of Jaguars Advantage, the new Jaguars fan loyalty program. With Jaguars Advantage, season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, go to Jaguars.com. Brian's in Mandarin, first up on Jaguars This Week. Hello, Brian. Good evening.
How you doing?
Good.
Could I have a question or comment kind of about the running game in Deji Kareem and his, lack of performance rather than his performance? This year I was really looking forward to having Rashad Jennings and Mujo back there, and I really thought they could be a tandem like Taylor and Jones-Drew were a few years ago. But with Rashad being out for the year, Deji's kind of come in and has really, I don't know, in my mind, been very disappointing. And I haven't really heard a whole lot of comments about that. I was wondering if y'all could comment on it and give us some feedback. Because maybe that's not what everybody's expecting him to do well, but I certainly was expecting more than what I've seen so far. So what do y'all think?
I'm in the same boat as you in that, I was looking forward to seeing Maurice and Rashad kind of team up in the backfield, and then they would have Deji as a primary kick returner, and then every now and again maybe a third down back. Losing Rashad hurt. There ain't no doubt about it. I mean, the guy has incredible hands. He was a big back. He could power. He could be a receiver. And Deji right now, I mean, the numbers don't lie. I mean, his production's not there. His production is even slacking as a kick returner, and that has to improve. There is no doubt about it. And I think in the game this past weekend, when Maurice wasn't a big part of the offense in the first half, where he had 5 touch opportunities in the first half and 4 touches because he had the drop, I saw Deji being inserted in the lineup, and I was kind of going, at a couple critical moments, and I'm going, I wanted to see Maurice stay in the ball game. It's not like he, was incredibly winded.
Why?
Oh, wow.
Well, he's one of the best players in the league.
Oh, I thought maybe he was nicked or something.
Well, one thing I guess that seems to be with Deji is he seems to get hit, he goes down. I never see much of him. Once he gets hit by somebody, he kind of goes right down. I don't know if that's been a knock on him or.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we can't say there's a knock because
he's
we've never really had to see Deji in that role until this year when Rashad got hurt. But we've seen Deji in the role as a kick returner. Certainly last year his production was a lot better as a kick returner than it is this year. Deji this year is averaging about what? Let me look at the number here. 22.0 a kick return. And you got to remember that, when he's coming out.
He's coming 8 yards deep.
Yeah.
I wrote this down. I keep notes during the game. And I wrote, why number 35 between the tackles on second drive? That's the second drive of the bowl game. Well, and I remember wondering why you run him between the tackles. And I never got back to asking you about it because they didn't really do it again.
But they did.
Between the tackles?
Yeah, he was – I believe so.
Okay, maybe they did. But I remember writing it down thinking it's strange that early in the game they don't put Maurice to run between the tackles.
Let's talk about the
– Well, I think one thing that has to happen with the offense is that now that they've decided, hey, look, we just need to play. In other words, we're not going to just pound it, and then limit the Blaine Gabbert opportunities. Now that we're going to open it up, now we need to strike a balance. And now that we're going to kind of find that balance, now we need to know how to manage the personnel in that balance. And I think that I hope that comes and that balance is where Maurice is in the backfield and he gets the ball, and not only as a runner but as a receiver out of the backfield. And that when Deji comes in, plays will be designed for Deji that would play to his strength, and certainly out of the backfield as a receiver would be one of them.
Jeff, you should be a diplomat. You are very good at just saying in a very kind way, why the heck did Maurice only have 12 touches during the game he's your best player on the field? And I'm fine with the throwing it 42 times or whatever you did. That's fine. But if you're typically in the NFL, Jeff, Brian, John, we've all seen a lot of games. How many plays you get? Between 63 to 73 at the high end is about the number of average plays offensively, the snaps you're going to get in an NFL game.
Okay.
So if you're going to throw the ball 42 times, I think Maurice has to touch the ball minimum 20 up to 25. 25, that's 67 plays. He should be in on every single snap until he is so winded he's tapping out, because you're not going to run the – Jeff said it perfectly. It's not the pound and ground out game that you have to bring in guys because Maurice can't carry it 50 times.
The only argument you can make is during the preseason there were plays – where Deji would break off 23, 25
yards. Maurice Jones-Drew is the second leading rusher in the NFL.
I'm just saying that would be the argument, is you think he can give you that pop. He hasn't done that so far, so clearly that has to change. But I'm saying that would be the argument. I don't necessarily agree with that argument, but that would be it.
Maurice Jones-Drew is our best player.
No doubt. You're winning the argument.
I argued
just saying it's an argument.
Last week, and I believe it, he's the best running back in football. He has to be on the field. Now, I agree what Dirk was doing before. Dirk had made up his mind that it was going to be, we're going to run the ball 50 times. In that case, you have to spell him. You have to spell him early.
All right, well, let's come back to the question from last week then. What's balance in the NFL? No, forget that. What's balance for this team? With Maurice being their best player and a rookie quarterback, knowing that it's a passing league.
50-50.
I don't think you can put a number on it. I think a lot of it depends on who your opponent is and how your quarterback is doing throughout the course of a game.
That's fair.
Situationally, then?
Yeah,
based on what you saw.
It just depends. I mean, it depends on how – you know you have proper balance when defenses don't know how to play you.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
And they're a long way from that.
You know, and there are ways away from that. But, hey, look, you know, this is a work in progress. You've got a rookie quarterback who essentially has had one game in which he's been allowed to throw. The first game – can't really even consider that one because it was a torrential downpour at Carolina. So it will get better. And, you know, Ernest Biner, the running back's coach, is the one who handles the running back rotation. And I think Ernest will get better at handling that rotation with this new system once he sees what it is. You know, I think Ernest in that game was kind of thinking, okay, you know, here's X number of plays. Now it's time to get Deji in. And then at the end of the day, Ernest is going – or at halftime, Ernest is going, whoa, wait a minute here. You know, I'm just talking out loud. I'm not saying he's thinking that or he's saying that, but he's probably going to have time to go, wait a minute, Maurice only had four touches and then he had the drop, so it would have been five touches in the first half. That's not good enough. And then in the second half, Maurice was in more.
Right.
So,
but the only if you're asking me what balance is for this team, just right situationally, the flow of the game, are you behind, are you up? Let's say this is a traditional game where you are in it through four quarters. It is a 50-50 ball club. I think you want Blaine right now to throw the ball between 33 to 40 times a game. And you want to run the ball, obviously, the rest of the time. And you want Maurice Jones-Drew to touch the ball between 20 to 25. If he's hot, 30.
Well, and from what Maurice said on Sunday, he was not surprised that the offensive game plan was to throw that much. And he wasn't surprised at the seven straight passes. And that was their plan going in. And what he said was they believed that the Saints were going to give them opportunities to throw and they had to take advantage of it. And I don't mind an offense if it's that loaded up against the run, trying to throw that much. But
swing it to him. He's great. Sure. Maurice is great in the open field. Get him on a little circle route.
Well, they had him
on the one he dropped. But
there was other opportunities that the quarterback just didn't see.
Okay.
You know, so I mean there were opportunities in that. But I mean the game plan was, and John's right on the money, in that they believed that if Greg Williams was going to bring 0 and 1 coverages, that they would be able to hit some big plays down the field. And it's a great idea, the only criticism that I had of it, kind of my thoughts in the game was that as part of that attack, you've got to be able to include 32, mm-hmm. As part of a passing option, because the New Orleans Saints are probably one of the best teams in the league at getting their back, Darren Sproles, involved in the passing game. And I'm not trying to criticize Dirk Cutter, but watching what Sean Payton is doing with Darren Sproles, it's fantastic.
Two questions, Jeff, for you, because you saw it from the vantage. I just saw the TV copy, and then you watched film. One, were we winning outside? Were our guys winning?
Yeah, they were winning outside, and in fact, I don't want to say consistently playing and play out, but they were winning.
So they were winning. So they were there.
There were some wins there. The issue was, did the quarterback find the win?
Right, which is a
rookie quarterback.
And did
the quarterback have time?
Yep.
And then if the ball was there, did they catch it? So
there's a lot. So they were winning.
A lot of
and
things.
The second question is, and I don't think any of us know the answer, I wonder if Dirk or because you saw it, I was watching, and they showed a lot of time. Dirk obviously spent a lot of time with Blaine. Does he go to Blaine because Maurice is open on those circle routes? Does he go to him and say, hey, listen, you need to look for 32 in the passing game? I mean, that's I don't know the answer to that. You know, do you want to put that thought into the quarterback's mind at a young age and not go through his progression? I mean, there's a lot of things that we don't know the answer to, and nobody does. But I'd be curious. I wonder if Dirk said, listen, right, the back's open underneath. Let's get the ball to him.
All right, folks, we've hit the bottom of the hour. Time for news on News Talk WOKV, and we're back with the 90 More Minutes presented by Aetna right after this. Welcome back. Jaguars This Week rolls along here in our first hour, and Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. Phone number this evening, 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351. Also at Tony Baselli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice. And where do you want to go this half hour?
Let's talk about the rookie quarterback.
All right. Which one?
No, ours. How did he play last week?
Boggs?
I thought the first half was pretty darn good for a rookie. You know, consider what he was facing. I thought in the second half, I think his footwork got a little sloppy. And when his footwork got a little sloppy, obviously the incompletion started popping up. But overall, I mean, he's clearly got a talented arm. I mean, some of the throws that he makes to the outside that require velocity and accuracy, you marvel at them. You know, the seam pass that he had to Zach Miller for the touchdown, wow. You know, Drew Brees made one of them throws. I don't know how long it took Drew Brees to figure out how to make that throw, but, I mean, Blaine Gabbert's making it as a rookie, and that's the one I showed Monday night on the television show.
It was there as Zach Miller turned his head.
You know, but there were a lot of decisions and understanding of where the ball needs to go that didn't happen, but you expect that out of a rookie. You know, and me and my brother were having a conversation. He was in town and watched the game, and, you know, he football guy, you know, played college ball and all that, and he said, you know, I thought his decision-making wasn't very good. And my response to that was, you know, I expect that from a rookie. You know, decision-making is going to get better. The more experience he gets, the better it gets. But clearly, the arm strength, the accuracy, and the competitive fire and the competitive spirit that he has and the poise that he has, they're all there.
Is the footwork thing something that needs to be fixed or something that needs to be worked on?
No,
more?
Worked on.
Or how do you do that?
It's not something that needs to be fixed. In other words, it's not a problem.
Okay.
You know, but in the second half, you know, maybe you're trying to press. You know, maybe you're thinking, you know, I'm getting off the spot. And so I think it's just it's an issue where it just has to be focused in on. I mean, just like a left tackle, you know, goes back to the fundamentals of footwork. You know, in pass sets or a defensive end when he's running games, it's a footwork issue when you're working with another guy for a timing issue. It's no different than the quarterback position. The best in the league, and if you just looked at him from the waist down, Tom Brady, the best. Nobody does it better with their footwork than Tom Brady. When Tom Brady's feet aren't good, and doesn't happen very often, you know, Tom Brady's not that good. But, I mean, he's the best in the league as far as his feet. And there are times, you know, if you watch Tom Brady, he gets back in the pocket and he sets up, and you would swear that he was a statue, and everybody's going, oh, my God, I can't believe he's just standing there. Well, he didn't have to go anywhere. And he's got his feet settled, and when his feet are good, he's unbelievable.
You know, you talk about footwork, and Jeff's exactly right. It's something you have to rep. In accuracy, everyone wants to talk about a big arm with a quarterback. And obviously, you need a big arm. You have to have at least a certain standard of arm to play in the NFL. There's no doubt about that. But it's not the big arm that completes passes. It's your accuracy. And accuracy comes from your feet. It's the foundation which you do everything around. And it's something you just have to rep. And Jeff's right. You look at the great quarterbacks, they have great footwork. I was talking to Mark Brunell about it, in talking about footwork. And a lot of times when you see young guys come into the league, it's their biggest weakness. Is because it has not been a focus in college because you don't have to. You can get away with things athletically. And so it's just going to take him time and reps and working on drills and reps and just going over that where he's comfortable stepping up, shuffling, and getting his feet under him when he delivers the ball. If you watch him, and the one is the Mercedes Lewis overthrow on fourth down, his feet were all over the place. and he was off balance. He threw it. That's why it wasn't accurate, not because he doesn't have the ability. He just has to work on the feet.
355-NFL-1. Let's go grab Jason in Hagerstown, Maryland, our first caller this half hour. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you guys tonight?
Good.
Glad to hear that. Hey, I was just really curious because it's tough watching, looking at the Jaguars' offensive line. It's a turnstile. I don't know where to begin. I mean, Eugene has been so great for us in the past, and it seems one damn bad game plus his injury, I don't know where he fits anymore. What do you guys think is the ideal offensive line? And who should be where?
Well, here we go back to talking about Eugene as turnstile. In the preseason, Eugene wasn't that good. You know, regular season, Eugene has been fine. You know, and Eugene didn't play this past week. You know, and as far as, you know, saying, hey, guys are, you know, getting turned loose by the offensive line.
Sometimes it's backs.
When Greg Williams sends eight guys, there's only five offensive linemen. And if you keep the tight end and the back end, guess what? That's still only seven. There's going to be a free guy. I mean, that happens when you play a defense, especially Greg Williams, that's going to send seven and eight guys and play zero coverage behind it. That happens. You know, one of the first sacks in the ball game, you can bring Jason back up. Jason, I'm gonna quiz you here. The first sack of the ball game on Blaine Gabbert, whose fault was it?
It looked like Eben.
Wrong.
Britton on the left.
Wrong. Maurice Jones-Drew.
Hard to remember. I'm sorry.
Maurice Jones-Drew.
Okay. But what I meant to say was who do you feel should be where? Not that they're not doing their job. Who should be left tackle? Who should be right tackle?
Well, clearly Eugene's the left tackle.
Without a doubt.
You know, Brad Meester's the center. Uche is playing, I think, pretty well at right guard. I think it's a toss-up whether you have Guy Wimper or Eben Britton at right tackle right now. But right now, Guy Wimper's playing pretty well. And I think Guy Wimper did a very good job against Will Smith, who is one of the better defensive ends in the National Football League. And for a guy who's been playing right since the New England preseason game, to be asked in 1 week to flip sides and go to the left
not
and face
easy.
Will Smith, man.
That's not easy.
That ain't easy. I thought he did good considering what he was asked to do. And I thought Eben, who had to play guard at Carolina and then turn around 1 week later be asked to play right tackle, I thought he played well.
Yeah, I'm not going to give it an A as far as the offensive line, but I didn't see them as the main issue in that game. I didn't think they played terribly. There was a lot of blitzing. You have to understand the passing game and protection obviously starts with the offensive line, but it's also then the quarterback's the next guy that's the most important player in that of IDing the front, directing the offensive line to who the Mike linebacker is, understanding where his pressure is going to come from, directing his back. Once that happens, if they bring more than you can pick up, you have to have some hot adjustment so the receivers are breaking off their route so the quarterback can get rid of the ball. It almost felt like, and Jeff, you saw the coach's tape, that at times all the receivers' backs were to the quarterback as the blitz is coming, and there's nowhere to go with the ball. You have to break off the routes, and it's a timing thing to get the ball out of the quarterback's hand. There's more guys than you can pick up.
John, I'm sure that you get the feeling for what I'm going to say here when you're in your inbox, and that let's say you've got a machine and there's a couple parts that aren't working mm-hmm. properly. All of a sudden, the whole machine's bad.
Right.
That's not the case, and so I mean, in other words, don't overreact, people.
And Eugene's become a whipping boy. I mean, he's obviously played better during the regular season. And you still get email after email, what's wrong with Monroe, what's wrong with Monroe. And
he's played well.
That's sort of, you know, that's sort of par for the course with a left tackle. You're going to get blamed.
He played well the week before.
Talked to him today, and he's back up to 300 pounds. You know, he said he still feels light. He said he feels like, you know, like he's put the weight on, you know, well. He's put on the right weight. And, you know, he thinks he's playing okay. You know, he's not
He's not the problem.
Right, he's not beating his chest, but, again, I agree with Tony, he's not the problem.
He's solid. I mean, he was awful during the preseason. I was very concerned how he would play. But maybe he wasn't given as focused or whatever because it's preseason. That happens to guys. From opening day to the third game where he played, he was hurt last week, Eugene Monroe is fine. I mean, you could argue and everyone talks about, well, he's a top 10 pick, you know, he needs to, you know, play better, he should be in the Pro Bowl. Yeah, I'm sure that's his goal. If you look at the tackles that were picked in the first round that year, Mike Ower is probably the only guy who's playing better than Eugene Monroe.
Right. No, he's a right tackle.
And Jason Smith was benched in St. Louis, too.
And
he was the number two pick.
I did St. Louis this week.
Yeah.
He's very average. Very, very average. And Jeff's right. Mike Ower played right tackle. He played left last year. And trust me, he had his struggles at left tackle last year.
If he was that good at left tackle, then they wouldn't assign McKinney and moved over to right.
Yeah, exactly. All right, folks, we need a break. Appreciate the phone call. We've got some tweets coming back at you when we return to Jaguars This Week on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it. All right, welcome back. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna and Bueller Swiss Watch Companies, the official watch of the Jaguars. You can grab yours at Jacobs Jewelers here in Jacksonville. If you're on the road, Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, Lorraine's Diamond Tree in Middleburg, Treasures Fine Jewelers in Palatka, and J. Carbone Jewelers in Valdosta. Working to be on the cutting edge of technology here, we, you know, grab the tweets that you send us. So, at Tony Buscelli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice, call Loggeman. Although I do have one that's got at Jags Voice, at Tony Buscelli, at Jeff Loggeman, and it says, joke, can you please work on logs to tweet?
Nope.
So there you go, folks.
Not going to happen.
Here you go. This is from Kevin. He wants to know what you feel about Logan Mankins' comments that the defense just stands around. And we've had a couple of people explain that today. Mankins was asked about the Jets' defense, and he said, essentially, well, I mean, it's, you know, they do a lot of things. I mean, it's not like they're the Jaguars who just stand around on defense.
Well, and he's
oh, you didn't hear that, Buscelli?
No.
Yeah, he's referring back to, I'm guessing, the 2007 playoff game in which the Jaguars' philosophy was is just play it very vanilla and just tackle. Because when you try to get fancy on Tom Brady, if you make a mistake, he's going to find it, and it's going to be a big play.
And Brady was 26 to 28.
And he was unbelievable.
But if you look back at that game, if we would have come up and tackled that game.
Yeah, would have been fine.
It would have been fine.
They just didn't tackle well.
They didn't tackle. I mean, we had the receivers dead to rights before the first down multiple times, and I bet you there was 12 to 15 missed tackles in key moments.
That's what he's referring to, because if he's talking about preseason, I mean,
yeah, no one
talking
does.
About
Come on,
preseason,
anyway.
Yeah.
So in other words,
whatever,
they didn't take
whatever,
it,
Logan.
They didn't take it, Kevin, with a whole lot. Here's one from Rob. He wants to know. It says it seems as Blaine doesn't play as tall as he really is. Your thoughts on if he doesn't? Play
I disagree.
As tall.
He doesn't have a clue.
I disagree. I thought Blaine stood very tall in the pocket and did a very good job. I mean, the thing that John and I. Question going into the Carolina game is how would his pocket presence be? I think he's improved 110% in that area of stepping up and
absolutely.
Hanging in there to the last minute. And he scrambles a couple times, but every quarterback does. I think he stands very tall in the pocket.
I'll go back to it. In the preseason, you know, that was the concern. And for 2 weeks, you didn't really know, I thought the first 2 weeks that he's played, he's been outstanding at that for – you know, a kid playing his first couple NFL games.
Yeah, I think he has progressed very nicely.
One more for me, and then we'll check in and see what you guys have. This is from our man, Field the Teal, and he wants to know what you guys see from the receivers when you watch the tape. And I have to tell you.
Well, let me start, because this is one of the areas that I wanted to go. Cecil Shorts needs to get in the playbook.
When you say that, you mean he's not running the right routes?
He doesn't know where to go?
He's not in the right place at times. And if you don't know where you're supposed to be, then you don't need to be out there.
Right.
Plain and simple. He needs to get in the playbook and learn. Jason Hill, not very good when he goes into the middle core of the defense, and when he's kind of on the perimeter, he's better. Mike Thomas even had a drop. You know, I mean, so overall, the receivers, you know, they got to be a lot better. It's not good enough. Chaston West, I mean, we active for the first time last week. You know, how do you really know? Zach Miller, I thought, was, you know, caught the touchdown pass, but I think his routes need to be better. Overall, the entire wide receiving group's routes have got to be better.
Is that good coaching?
They're not crisp enough. Whatever you want to call it, they got to be better, whether it's, you know, individual
guys. It's the whole room. You know, it's coaching. It's individual players. I mean,
whatever you want to call it, that needs to be better. You know, when you can sell a route to create separation, I mean, Keenan McCardell's the perfect example, you know, and I hate to go back.
I saw Keenan this weekend at St. Louis, Washington. Yeah, talked to him for about 20 minutes.
One of the greatest route runners, you know, of our era, you know, all of our eras, you know, I mean, since we've been covering the league.
Could make it.
Wasn't fast, you know, wasn't shifty, but, man, he just knew how to get open. He knew how to sell a guy into believing that he was going to the right when he was going to the left.
For a guy who ran about a 4.8, 4.7, he can run by a lot of corners.
Right. Yeah, and so, I mean, if they can get some of that, boy, would it help.
Don't tell Keenan I said he ran a 4.7. He'll get really upset. Oh, yeah.
Keenan liked him some Keenan.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what, it was great seeing him. He is loving coaching. And he's
same hairdo, too, by the
same
way.
Same exact hairdo. Looks no different than the day he played. And I think he still thinks he can go play right now.
There's no question he thinks he can play.
And he's a good coach.
Did you see him after the game? What was he dressed like?
No, I didn't see him afterwards. I saw him on the field before. And he does a good job with his guys, too. His guys play well.
No one dressed better than Keenan.
No, he's doing a good job.
You got anything, Osher?
Do I ever have anything?
Always.
No, I mean, not anything. Tweet-wise.
I got a tweet from Feel the Teal. How is the asking Jeff and I and Jag's voice, how is the defense progressing through four games? What is our grade of the defense?
After you know, four games, you know, B minus, you know, just because of the wins and losses. I mean, if they were 3-1, I'd give them an A minus. You know, I just think they got to find a way to create more consistent pressure up front.
If I don't think they have the guy to do that though.
Well, I mean, maybe they do. I mean, will Aaron Campman come back and help that? You know, will better play out of Matt Roth do that? Will Jeremy Mincy, if he plays better, could they do that? I just think it can be better, you know. So the defense B minus C plus, you know, somewhere right in there.
But you just don't have the guy, and I'm not being critical. I mean, I think our defensive line plays very hard. Great effort. Austin Lane on the sack he had was a very nice move. Tenacious. I love Jeremy Mincy. I think he's a guy that any team would want playing.
He didn't have a very good game.
No, I'm not saying this last game, but I'm just saying overall. But you don't have the one guy on this team that some. I look back at when I played offensive line. You sat in the meeting, and when you looked at you scouted at them on Wednesday, there were teams where they had that one guy that you knew where he was going to be, and the offense needed, and you were going to possibly put a back on him or be aware, or if the guy was, you knew going to the game that if someone was going to have trouble with them, you're going to slide the protection or do something. And then there are teams you played, you wouldn't even talk about it. You just say, okay, we're just going to block it normal. And I think right now we're a team that doesn't have that guy. You don't have the game plan.
You guys have seen more than I have. If Campman's healthy, is he that guy? You have to count for him?
If he, you know, he's right. If he's back to what he was before he had the knee, yeah. I mean, one guy can make a big difference. I mean,
one
guy.
Shifts blocking.
One
makes
a difference.
You know, it makes the quarterback get off the spot, and then all of a sudden it's a new angle for a defensive lineman to take, and all of a sudden it becomes easier for them, you know. But defensively, you know what, 5 interceptions on the year?
5.
You know, you've got how many fumble recoveries?
0.
Right. 0. Okay? And when you're playing, you know, with a young quarterback, you got to be better than that.
They haven't even forced a fumble since Drew Coleman on opening day on that sack.
And as we've talked about, you know, the defense, you gave it a BJ, that's probably about right, because against Carolina they had a lot of turnover opportunities, didn't quite take advantage of it. At some point, to be an A defense and to really be a huge factor, you've got to turn those sort of opportunities into scores and into game-turning plays.
Yeah, I gave him a B-.
Okay,
B-. You didn't give him a B.
Oh, okay.
There's a difference there.
All right, folks, we've reached.
We come back.
Yeah.
Special teams.
All right, we'll go there. Plus your tweets, folks. We'll get to at Jags Voice, at John Osher, at Tony Buscelli, the phone number you've got. Hey, if you're a parent or guardian of a girl 6 to 17, stop by your local Bell store and register your child to become a member of the Junior Roar. They'll perform at halftime when the Jags host the Bucks on December the 11th. Registration now through the 6th of November. All the rules are at your nearby Bell store. News is next on News Talk WOKB. Depend on it. Well, Sunday is Melanoma Awareness Day, and it's brought to you by Coolabar. Don't drop the ball. Remember to check your skin. Learn more at melanoma.org. Brian Sexton, John Osher, Tony Buscelli, Jeff Loggemann, and Joe Fortunato. What's the score of the Phillies game?
2-1 Phillies.
And you can sweep it out tonight.
Go Cardinals.
You're done.
Don't microphone is turned off.
Yep. Don't push it. 355 NFL 1.
Are you ready for my special teams thing here? You know, when you've got a young quarterback, you've got to help him out with field position. You know, whether it be defensively with takeaways or whether it be winning special teams, and right now they're not. Looking at some of the rankings, punt return, they're ranked 29th. I think it's time to put Mike Thomas back as the punt returner. Cecil Shorts, he had an opportunity late in that ball game when that punter kicked that 58-yarder, and he had a lot of room, and all of a sudden it turned out to be a 4-yard punt return. That wasn't good enough. Their kick return is ranked 27th in the National Football League. That's not good enough. That's not as good as they were last year. You look at their opponent's kick return, they're ranked 22nd in the National Football League. So in those three rankings, they're in the bottom tier in the National Football League. The only one that they're not is their opponent's punt returns. But the only reason that they're not there because they're ranked 10th in their opponent punt return average is because their punter hasn't been very good.
Right.
They hadn't been punting to them.
You mean when you shank it out of bounds for 20 yards, it doesn't hurt you?
Now, they're losing the field position battle on special teams. The average drive start for the Jaguars is like 20.4, and their opponents are starting at 24. I mean, that's those things add up when you've got a young quarterback.
And as we've discussed, on some teams that doesn't matter much. On this team, it matters greatly. This is a team that expects to be great on special teams. I mean,
the ironic thing is, wasn't it the one time Matt Turk hit the great punt and backed him up, Drew Brees took him the length of the field and scored?
Yeah, when he pinned him down at the 3.
And they had him on 3rd and 13, and it was a little dump off to Darren Sproles.
You know, and they are hurting in some with personnel. I mean, Kasim is out.
Yeah, your two
Montella's out.
Guys are gone.
But then on top of that, your third best special teams player, Courtney Green, was inactive with a neck. Who do you think is the fourth best special teams player?
Russell Allen, maybe?
William Middleton. William Middleton is now not playing on special teams because Derek Cox didn't play last week, and he's got a groin. So now you can't have your fourth best special teams player. So when you're missing your top four core guys, it's hard to be that
good.
And
you're not executing very well.
And you're not having the guy striking the ball hitting very well. And I'm not talking about Scobie. I'm talking about Turk. That's got to change.
Were you surprised they didn't bring guys in to work out this week? Just as it's two in a row that he's had some disappointing kicks.
No, I mean I'm not surprised, but I mean I don't know who they bring in or who they don't bring in. So maybe they did. We don't know. I have no clue. Maybe they brought somebody in Sunday night. You know, worked them out under the lights. You know, you just don't know. But it's not good enough. You know, Matt Turk's got to be a strength. I mean, he's a veteran player.
355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. Here's a tweet for you. It's from Jaguars Blog. I thought that was you.
No, he's the ozone.
Yeah. Have you guys noticed Alu-Alu's knee bothering him in-game? Has he been performing below expectations?
Yeah. I noticed it, and I said something to somebody just on Monday. Tyson's not healthy. He doesn't push off. He's dragging the leg. He's favoring it. If he can't change direction, he can't finish plays because he has no power in that leg. Heck, at times it looked like he has trouble getting up off the ground because of his leg. The guy is obviously injured. And at some point, you got to wonder, when's it time to protect the kid? I mean, he is a very good player with a ton of upside, a ton of ability. At some point, you got to look at him and say, listen, he is playing fine. I mean, he's playing sturdy and he's doing that type, but he's not going to give you any explosive plays right now because of his knee. And you look at it, and what risk are we putting him in for the long term of his career? Because this is a kid you want for 10 years who's only going to get better.
But and you don't know. I mean, that's
– No, I'm just saying from watching
right.
from the
– We don't know.
I have no idea.
One thing
a doctor.
That we know for sure is that every Wednesday for the last couple of weeks, he has not practiced.
Right.
And he's a second-year player. Second-year players
practice.
Typically don't get Wednesdays off from practice if they're healthy.
And that, you know, from what he said last week, that's pretty much the plan. I mean, that's not going to be something that changes.
So that means there's something wrong in this. None of us know, and they don't have to disclose exactly what's going on besides the fact that he doesn't practice. But I do, and I've noticed it the last 2 weeks. Watching him play, you worry about what damage is he going to do, and you know, at some point, I think you say, if it doesn't get better, are we better off making sure this kid gets right because we need him for the long haul because he's a foundational piece of this defense?
He's not playing bad.
No, he's not at all.
You know,
but he's not so playing as well difference. As he did against Atlanta when we saw
Holy
him.
Holy cow, in the preseason, you know, we were going, wow. I mean, we were all saying, what a training camp. This guy just, you know,
looks
can't
great.
Be blocked.
Yeah.
And, you know, we haven't seen that in the regular season.
But if they're going to be as good on defense long term as they hope they can be,
he's got to be one of
them. He's got to be special. And
he has, and here's
he was special the preseason.
Well, here's the thing that frustrates me. He has the potential to be special. He has the ability to be special. I think he has the mindset, the work ethic to be special. But if you're injured, you're injured. Right. There's nothing you can do. And I give the kid credit that he's showing toughness and character of trying to play. But this is where, and again, I want to make sure we're clear, I'm clear. I don't know the severity of it.
Right.
You have to trust the doctors.
I just wonder, you know, last year.
He was injured all last
season,
too.
Was injured, and then you have a lockout. You know, is this part of the reason why, you know, that, you know.
He didn't get better maybe fully.
Right. You know, maybe it was, I don't know. That'd all be speculation.
355 NFL.
But the thing we're not speculating on, or at least I'm not, something's wrong.
Oh, no, there's no doubt. He's wearing a brace. He's not practicing on Wednesday.
Forget about the brace and not practicing Wednesday. Watch him. Watch his leg. Watch how he favors it. Watch how he tries to move. Watch him try to get up. I mean, it's obvious as the day is long.
So I'm walking off the field with his old college buddy Cameron Jordan on Sunday, and he was limping. So walking, clearly, it was bothering him.
That's a concern.
Plus he's missing practice. Plus he's got the brace. We'll have to see how that one goes. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Mary is in Mandarin, and she is our first call in this half hour. Hello, Mary. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I don't know if this is a good question or not because I don't know all the rules and guidelines, but I know we have cap money, cap room money or whatever, and I know we have a limit to the number of players we have, but how can we or are we allowed to, like, somehow get other players and use that money at this point in the season? I don't know how we can
Mary, we can. We could go get – I mean, there's no limitation of as long as you're not over the cap to sign guys, but the reality is there's nobody out there to go sign that's going to be a difference maker because if there was
– they'd already be on,
someone's team. So it's a good question because there are – is that's a great question to understand the cap, and you have to have room, and we have room. But you got to have somebody to spend those dollars on. The only other way to acquire talent right now is trade. The trade deadline's, I think, in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And typically in the NFL, it's not a trading league because it's hard to bring a guy in midway to learn a system. It's such a team sport where they can really make an impact that's going to help your team. And you really don't want to give up draft picks at this point, especially where we are as a team. And so I think we're pretty much going to play with the hand that we've been dealt.
And most teams don't like to trade good players.
No.
I mean, yeah, not being facetious, but they just –
No, if they're good, they want to keep –
Trading always sounds great for the fan of the team, but they realize that the other team doesn't want to give up –
There's bad – if you're getting a guy, there's a reason you're getting him.
The best news about, what is it, $34, $35 million in cap room is he got a lot of young players, and in the next year or two, some of those guys – you're going to want to lock up.
Well,
like
they did that with Montel
for the last couple of years.
They did that with Montel.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, you're going to lock up some guys that you think, you know, going to be the core going forward. And then, you know, the one thing, Mary, that you don't want to do is to just spend money just to spend money. You know, because the more money you spend just to spend, that means the less money you have to really improve the football team in the future. So, their cap management is fine. I mean, this football team spent a ton of money in free agency.
$112 million.
That's not total.
That's the contract's value.
Yeah.
That's
signing
not cash
bonus, though. Guaranteed money was what?
I don't remember. Somewhere in the 60s.
Yeah.
A lot.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. No, it's a lot of money. All right. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Let's take a break. We'll come back with more Jaguars this week right after this. And fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. Rolling right along here on Jaguars This Week. Join us, 355-NFL1, at Tony Baselli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice. And we go to Tracy in South Point up next in the 7 o'clock hour. Tracy, good evening.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah. Hey, comment and a question. You were talking about Tyson and Tyson Alualu and whether they play him or not. That's probably what you get when you've got a coach on a get-to-the-playoffs or bust kind of a edict there. So
there's some truth to that.
That may be part of the issue. My question is, I called twice during the preseason and asked this question, and you all declined to answer it, about how, and I know you were trying to sell season tickets at the time, but how the current CBA stacks up for small markets. I really hope you can, at this point, give me your real opinion on that.
I don't recall you calling and asking that question, and I don't know why that would impact season ticket sales.
Yeah, what does that have to do
at all? Yeah,
tea in China.
Yeah, no, it has nothing to do with anything at all. To be honest with you,
let me address the first part of that.
Price
of
tea in China?
The first part of that is, you know, is Tyson playing because there's a coach on the hot seat?
I don't think so.
Hey, nah. Guys play hurt all the time in the league. That's just the way it is. You play. You play hurt, you play healthy,
he's
up. Doesn't matter. The second part of your question, I don't understand why you thought that we would not want to answer that.
It had nothing to do with season tickets.
That doesn't have anything to do with season
tickets.
Were
you dodging questions, Jeff?
No.
It's not your personality.
We had said this before on a past radio program that we thought that the collective bargaining agreement was
positive.
Very good for small market teams, and we explained why as far as the percentage breakdown in the different categories for small markets is favorable. In other words, the national TV pie for the owners to get to keep is not as large as what it is for local revenue in other areas, which makes it more sustainable.
And
for
Wayne's
small
very
market
much
franchises.
On record saying the same thing, that it's, you know, they still have to work hard, but it's a very workable agreement for Jackson.
It rewards them, though, for going out and creating local revenue because it lets them keep more of it.
Right.
Well, basically, the most simple way to understand it, I think, and I think I'm correct, the majority of the players' money now comes from the TV and media deal.
Right.
I mean, they're basically that's where they're going to.
They get 55% of the national TV money.
Right.
They get 45% of the ticket money, but they only get 40% of the local revenue. They've divided it into three buckets, essentially, 55, 45, 40. And because the owners now have the incentive, they're going out and they're creating more money on a local basis.
Right.
That's the fair way to look at it.
Yep.
But we still only have Wayne's word to go on. We have, what, 6 weeks, 8 weeks of a track record on it? Let's let it go a little bit and see where it goes. 355-NFL-1. 800-355-6351.
But this was not a deal that you had, you know, Ralph Wilson saying, I don't know why we're signing this. Nobody said anything like that.
No, it's a great deal.
I mean, it's
the owners are very happy.
After a long time with a bad CBA for small markets, and I know I saw Wayne right after it was, you know, signed or decided.
He was
really happy. Yeah.
He was thrilled.
So, I mean, it's – I don't think we would have organized that.
You know, Tracy, sometimes it's not always
some
conspiracy thing going on, and you know what? The last time I checked, we've not hesitated to answer any question on this show.
So there. Okay. Some Twitter questions, and we'll start with...
I did just get a text message about the CBA. The national revenues for the team exceed the player costs.
There you go.
So, meaning, it's very favorable.
Yes.
Because it's your national revenues. It's not as dependent on just your drumming up where Washington would have a huge advantage or New York over
a local
because they're much bigger local revenue pie.
355-NFL-1. Here you go.
Who came up with that, by the way?
There was a guy in the league office that came up with the uncoupling.
Yeah, there's one guy that
Frank something.
Yeah, that came up with that.
I had a conversation with Bill Prescott about this on the practice field. In fact, you were standing right there, Tony, back in training camp. And he gave us the guy's name, and I didn't recognize it. But it was somebody on the periphery of the deal who said, well, what if we did this? And
and
that was really the thing that created the deal. So I went to get
it. And it incentivizes the players where it might not be as big a pie right now, but where the TV deals are going in the next couple years, what they expect to, once again, somehow double.
Yeah, the thought was they double
which I believe they will. It's a very good situation, and the guy's name is Joe Seclair.
Joe Seclair.
There you go.
355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. A couple tweets here. expected to do. Here's why is special teams play such a surprise? Our best special teams players are out. And how good was Purnell with Indy? I think you've touched on the players being out, but you were in Indy when Russ was there. And Russ has a great reputation in the league.
The Colts, I've always thought there's only so much a special teams coach can do. It depends on the philosophy of the team. The Colts were a team that paid their core guys a lot of money and didn't focus very much on having veteran guys who weren't part of their core. You would not see a Kasim Osgood, for example, on the Colts because he's a special teams guy who's not going to be an elitely paid wide receiver, for example. The Colts chose to spend money there. When you have that situation, I think there's a limit to how good your special teams are going to be because you're not emphasizing the area. That said, with what Russ had to work with up there, I always thought he did a very good job. So, I mean, that's just from seeing it for 7 years, that was my impression.
They were pretty good last year.
Well, they were.
Last 2 years.
Yeah. Outstanding.
Last couple of years. You know, the only thing that's really changed is you've got some core guys that are out.
New punter.
And you've got a different punt returner.
Here, Logs, here's someone disagreeing with you on Twitter. It says, I disagree with Logs regarding Paz, Mincy, and Britton. Some of us thought Mincy was good and Paz and Britton were bad.
Well, if some of them thought it, Jeff, I mean, it must be right.
I'm lost here.
Oh, you just got a guy who wants to come back and say, oh, no, I thought Mincy was good.
Production wasn't there.
Gotcha.
If anybody thinks Paz has been bad this year,
they don't know football.
Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, yeah.
If you think Poslesny has not been playing at a high level,
you're missing it.
If there's a key to the defensive improvement, I mean, you can't put it all on one guy, but he's been pretty critical to it.
He's been fantastic.
And the thing about it
is you're excited about what he can still become.
Sure. He's a young player.
Yeah.
Well, he also helps him in terms of getting – the defense called, seeing it, being able to communicate with the sideline. I mean, he's what you got to have as a middle backer.
Here's another great thing. I think it's made Darryl Smith better.
Yeah, because it's taken
the pressure where he had. Try to do so many different things when we weren't as good at that position. With Paz in there, you look at. I thought Darryl Smith played an outstanding ball game and has played very well this year as well.
Real solid. Had sack. You know, the interception.
The interception was a great play. How he baited.
Well, the whole reason why was the awareness. I mean, he knew
right
Darren Sproles was to the outside. He knew that Darren Sproles is a focal point of the passing game. He sold to Drew Brees that he was coming, and he didn't. And then he stayed out of his vision, and he almost baited him into making that throw. And then he caught it, which a lot of them can't catch it.
Osh, what you got?
Well, I had one address to all three of us, not Logs, because he doesn't tweet.
I think I saw the smoke signal go up for Logs.
It says the Jags sign guys good at blitzing, but they do at least in the NFL. Think they'll blitz more going forward. I personally think they don't blitz by design. I mean, they feel like they want to get pressure with four and play the back seven. I mean, that's the ideal way to go.
Jeff made a great point earlier. You have to get more pressure.
Sure.
And I don't know if they have the guys up front to do it by themselves. And the only way to do that is manufacture it through the blitz.
Well, they did blitz some in the game, but, I mean, this is not going to be a team that's going to rely on the blitz when you're missing a starting corner. Boy, that would probably make you think twice about going to more blitz packages. But, I mean, if you think back to the game on Sunday, Poslesny had a hit on Drew Brees that forced an incomplete pass on third down. Then he had a sack.
And Darryl had a sack, too.
So, there's three blitz calls right there. I mean, you don't have to blitz every down.
It's when you do it.
So, and the philosophy has changed a little bit. You know, they wanted to go into this year and not do a lot, but do what they do very well. And there's nothing wrong with that philosophy. Now, Mike Smith had that philosophy, and Mike Smith was very successful at it.
You can pick it apart, and that's what we do. It's what fans do. It's what our jobs are. You can pick apart all the details, but the bottom line is overall, this season, they're doing very well with what they've been, with their task. And
I mean, I think it'd be fair to say defensively, for the most part, they've been playing winning football. Yeah. I know we're 1-3, so the great elixir in the NFL is wins. It makes everything, it's like, we used to joke, it's like gravy. If you have a good gravy, you can have a really tough piece of meat that tastes, you know, terrible by itself. You get good gravy, just slop some gravy on that thing. All of a sudden, you have a great meal.
We need some gravy around here, guys.
We're talking Italian gravy. We're talking a rich red sauce.
Red sauce, you know, white gravy, brown gravy, just gravy's gravy. Gravy. And we need some gravy.
That's a promo.
I like the white gravy on biscuits.
Oh, outstanding. And the biscuit doesn't have to be the best biscuit if the gravy's good.
Chicken fried steak.
Oh, outstanding. So
this is what you get, folks, when you tune in here.
And you think about chicken fried steak, that's a bad piece.
I think about it all the time.
I do, too. It's a bad piece of meat with some good breading with some great white gravy. That's all you need. And if you have good gravy, which is wins, it makes everything look and taste better. And right now, there's no gravy.
Is it time for a break?
Well, I just want to know if Joe wants to weigh in.
No, he's absolutely right. Especially with the bread. Sop it in there. Oh. If the gravy's good, it's all over.
You give me, I'll tell you this. You give me some good red gravy, and give me a stale piece of bread, I'll kill it.
Stale loaf of bread, you mean.
Oh, yeah. But that's it. So, but to John's point, so when you lose, you start picking apart every little detail of what is wrong. When you win, guess what?
It's gravy.
Everybody's doing great. Dirk Cutter's a brilliant play caller. You know,
everybody's got that stale bread in the red sauce.
You're right. You're happy.
Also want to thank you for calling it gravy and not sauce.
You're welcome.
There is a difference.
That's South Philly right there, baby. All right, we take this break for news at the bottom of the hour. 30 more minutes of this program. You know the number. You know the Twitter addresses. Phone lines are stacking. Should be fun. See you after the news on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it. Well, on Tuesday, October the 11th, RPM Automotive invites you to their new Northside location. That's 13131 Wolf Bay Drive. And you'll have cookies with the Jaguars rookies. They'll be there from 3 to 5, signing autographs and sharing cookies with you and your kids. That's Tuesday, October the 11th, this coming Tuesday, at the brand new RPM Automotive on the north side, 13131 Wolf Bay Drive.
You know, I was just thinking, if Mark Duffner's wife is making them cookies, you want to be there.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, let's look forward a little bit.
Okay.
You want to look forward a little bit, or you want to take all the? You want to knock out some calls?
Well, let's knock out a couple calls because these folks waited through the break. And
yeah, let's
then
do
we'll
that. Yeah, I want to talk about the Bengals' number one defense coming to town.
All right, so we'll start with the David on the south side. First call to the final half hour. Hello, David.
Hello, how are you, gentlemen?
Good.
Great. Just wanted to, at first, Philly's 1-3. I was wondering if they were tough and fatty without gravy or if they were still a Pennsylvania prime rib up there.
They're right now, if you ask their fans, they are a dog food that needs a lot of gravy, because you think it's tough being 1-3 here? Go up to Philly right now and find out what they're saying about those guys.
Well, you just asked Joe.
Hear about this. They're asking in Philly, they want Andy Reid fired.
Yeah, no, you're right.
They want Andy
right.
Reid
yes,
fired.
It's the dream team.
One of
the
greatest.
Dream team.
I mean, but no, let's think about this.
Great
Andy Reid,
mind.
Great offensive mind, one of the great head coaches in football. Gone, hasn't won a Super Bowl, but went to, what, 3 or 4 straight NFC title games, perennial playoff team, and they want him fired at 1-3.
Tough league.
Tough city.
You have another thought?
Space real quick on Jason Hill. You touched base on the receivers and him. I, last couple games, I watched them closely, and this last home game, I've got seats close down to the field, and a few plays were down real close to me. I watched him, and I've seen him fight for the ball. I've seen him snatch it out of the air. I've seen glimpses, but then I've seen him just flutter. And just wanted to see if you could expound a little bit if he's kind of at capacity, or what his skills are, or what his talents are, or if you think he's got some chances to grow and become something special.
Jeff, you go, because you explained him perfectly, I think, in the first hour.
He's a better player when he's on the perimeter. And I mean the perimeter, sideline, boundary, and then down the field, much more so than he is in the interior. And that's where he needs to be more. Mike Thomas inside, Jarrett Dillard inside. You know, have we seen – I mean, Jason had the one drop down the boundary.
Yeah.
But all of his drops have been inside. I mean, that the quick slants, the crossing routes.
Would they be better off, Jeff, putting Jarrett Dillard out there?
Jarrett Dillard was pretty good the other day.
His catches to 17 and 25 yards.
And he's not afraid to go in the middle.
No. No, it's what he does. Appreciate the call, David. 355-NFL-1. Kathy is on the west side. She's next. Hello, Kathy.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. A little intimidated here talking to all the experts out there. But
where?
Anyway, I was just going to ask a question. I was told I was incorrect about something, so let me – maybe you can refresh my memory.
Was this by a man?
Pardon me?
Was this by a man or
oh, we're
lady?
Talking about something that was going on in the football there.
Right, okay.
I'm not talking about plays or something, but let me get to it. Sunday, I didn't really get a chance to watch the game. I was running errands, but I was listening to it on the radio. And I remember hearing, and I thought it was somewhere in the late third quarter or maybe early fourth quarter. It was a point of time. Do you remember the time when we went, it was fourth and two. We went for fourth and two.
Yes.
Yeah, they went for back-to-back fourth down. The fourth and two was from just inside the 20-yard line.
Yeah, I thought it, that's what I had said, that we were in the red zone. Weren't we in Saints territory?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It was just inside the 20. It was a yard and a half.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I kept saying, and I said, no, it wasn't. But anyway, so it's fourth and two, and you guys sort of alluded to this just a while ago in the first, well, about an hour or so ago. Why the heck didn't we give it to Maurice, either, you know, to run it, because he has the passion and the guts. He is going to bite, scratch, click, claw to get that 2 yards. Or if we didn't trust that, we thought, well, the Saints were onto him, you know, maybe would defend too well. Don't we have a quarterback sneak or quarterback draw play or something? Couldn't we have sent Blaine's a big boy?
Yeah, but 2 yards for a quarterback sneak is too much.
You know, he barely got the one that was a foot.
Yeah, the as far as running Maurice,
Carolina.
Was Maurice on the field for the fourth and two?
I thought Deji was.
Can't remember.
No, I think Maurice
third and two at one point, and they threw twice. I think.
But there was a fourth down. It was just inside
right.
the 20.
But if you're going to be critical of
I don't recall
the play calling, I think you go back to where third and two they threw it, fourth and two they threw it. If you know it's four down territory with 2 yards to go, why not give it to Maurice twice?
You like the odds.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have a better chance in putting in the quarterback's hand, a rookie quarterback. Right. That'd be the only critical comment I'd make. Fourth and two, I think you have to throw the ball.
355 NFL1. We stay on the phone lines and we go to Jeff on the south side. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, guys.
You're on the air.
I say, hey, guys.
Hey.
Sorry.
And my question to you is Mike Lowry, the safety, is he going to be a part of the long-term future in Jacksonville? Are they going to sign him to an extension?
Well, it's Dwight Lowry. I don't know what his contract is.
I think he's in his final year. They traded for him, and he's in his final year.
He's in the original year.
I got a couple questions on these. I think you want to give it time. You know,
I was told he played very well.
Yeah, we're four games in. I think there's time to decide if he's part of the long-term future or not.
Well, you drafted Chris Brzezinski, too. So.
Right.
And they're both seeing the field quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, let it play out.
How'd Brzezinski play?
He's getting better. You know, he's getting better. He's got some range. He's tackling pretty well. You know, he's not on the field a ton. It's only in sub. You know, and what they do is they'll bring Dewan Landry up in the box and then bring Brzezinski in. And so you got Brzezinski and then Dwight Lowry as your two deep safeties. So, you know, I think John is right on the money. You know, I mean, you make the evaluation at the end of the year or towards the end of the year when you can keep some of that cap room in this year's. And I don't know the exact rules, but if you could use up some of this year's cap with a guy who that towards the end of the year you feel really good about, then you know, then you work on that.
There's not always a rush to decide on, you know.
There's no urgency today.
Yeah, November, December, you can go to the guy and say, look, we want to lock you up or not. But I don't think you have to do it in October.
No, I don't either.
355 NFL1. It's not quite John Lennon, but, you know, we probably should tell you that we're hearing that Apple is confirming that Steve Jobs has died today. And since you guys both have iPhones and I have an iPad, and he's considered a major marketing genius, getting people up to date. 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351. Lee is in Ponte Vedra. Hello, Lee.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I'm looking forward. How would you scheme it up to beat the Bengals? And by the way, I'll throw in some comments. I sure like to see Mercedes getting some passes in the seam route and some more crossing and slant routes.
They took him out of the game, though. Did they? I mean, the game plan of the Saints was to make sure Mercedes didn't hurt him, and they bracketed
him. Yeah, they covered Mercedes very well.
Yeah, they doubled him up.
So, but I mean, you know, I want to see Mercedes too. You know, catch more balls, get more involved. And that's all part of this evolution,
yep.
You know, with this offense. That I'm going back to what I said earlier in the show, and that, you know, you've got to find this balance, you know, with this new style, and that's a work in progress with a young quarterback, and it's going to take time.
And it takes time to figure out up close what he does well, what he's going to be comfortable with, what he's going to grow with. And I don't think that's an overnight thing. I mean, fans kind of say, well, why can't you do this? Why can't you do this? And coaches get used to a guy. They go back. They look at tape. They figure out what he's doing well. They use it more. It's an evolution process. But
well, and I don't want people to think that, that Mercedes Lewis is Antonio Gates, you know, when Antonio Gates is healthy. I mean, Mercedes is a dominant run blocker, and he is a good receiver. Let's not turn him into who's the best tight end in football, Aaron Hernandez.
Right.
You know, maybe the best receiving tight end in football. That's not what Mercedes is. So let's not get carried away with the whole Mercedes needs to be, you know, the target all the time.
One more tweet, then we'll take our final break, come back, look around the NFL in Week 5. Who would you take, wide receiver, 2012 draft? Alshon Jeffrey from South Carolina or Justin Blackmon from Oklahoma State?
I'd take Blackmon. Looks like a more complete receiver. Alshon Jefferson, whatever his name is a man-child.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a big boy. Looks like he can play defensive end. But I think the more complete receiver, from what I've seen, which is very limited,
right,
is Blackmon.
Yeah, Blackmon just looks like one of those guys. You know, looks like Dez Bryant. You know, looks like that impact guy.
Don't say Dez Bryant.
Well, supposedly, because obviously Dez Bryant's an Oklahoma State guy as well. This kid is...
Well, Dez is pretty good. I mean, might have some issues in the head.
In the jewelry store?
Yeah, he might, but watch him when the ball's in the air and what he does.
The physical skills are said to be comparable, but off the field, he's a hard-working, good kid.
Yeah.
That's the word on...
I like AJ Green.
Him. Yeah. Yeah. He is really good, isn't he?
Oh.
Have you seen any of the Bengals, Jen?
I have not.
Wow.
He's really, really good.
We did the film room segment with Jack for his TV show.
And defensively, they're very good, too.
Yeah, they just play hard. I mean,
number one defense in the NFL.
They play hard, you know. I mean, they don't have any standout defensive players, you know, like a Freeney or a Mathis or
how about the next 3 weeks?
Ware.
Next 3 weeks, we play the top three defenses in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, there's some debate about what's going on with Pittsburgh. You know, Baltimore's good. Pittsburgh, you know, maybe not so great. You know, but
well, then the Texans, who've been pretty good too, so the whole month is a double chin strap.
You know what's impressed me the most though about Cincinnati. I mean, Cincinnati is a play. Here they are, a team that lost their starting quarterback. They've got a head coach that, you know, many people were crying for his head. And so you would think that type of team energy wouldn't be there, you know, with the Bengals. You know, young quarterback, guys, you know, we probably don't have a chance. And that defense is playing as hard as any defense that I have seen in the league this year in the Bengals. They are playing very hard.
All right, let's take our final break.
Hey, even Reggie Nelson is playing well and playing hard.
We break and we return. One more segment after this. All right, about 9 minutes left in the show. Take a look at some games around the National Football League this weekend and see what interests you. New Orleans at Carolina? Not really.
Well, I mean, you know, but that might be 1,000 yards passing in that game, the way the Carolina Panthers and Cam Newton are throwing around.
Tennessee at Pittsburgh. Tennessee's 3-1. Pittsburgh's, they're in.
Reeling.
Their offensive line is in trouble. And
the quarterback's hobbled up because of a foot. Rashad Mendenhall's out.
Yeah.
Harrison had surgery. He's out. They got major issues.
Not a lot of games that just stand out at you. Kansas City and Indianapolis, you know, 1-2. Yeah, it's.
How many wins Kansas City have?
One. They beat the Vikings. They're 1-3. You've got 0-4. So, you know, Indy may get their first win. Yeah. They played hard the other night. Philadelphia at Buffalo. I mean, everyone thought it was going to be.
I think that's a good one.
Philly undefeated in Buffalo.
I mean,
1-4.
Well, Philly's got to win that.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big game because the Eagles are kind of got their backs, you know, up against the wall, and the Buffalo Bills are playing good football. And I had a chance today to watch the Buffalo-Cincinnati game, and Buffalo plays hard, and they play smart.
All right. How about Seattle at the Giants? Not a lot. Cincy at Jacksonville, we've talked about.
The
Rookie Bowl. Oakland at Houston?
That's a good game.
Mm-hmm.
Oakland's a very good football team. Houston's obviously playing very well right now.
But no
Andre
Johnson.
How much does that hurt them?
A lot.
Hurts him a bunch. I mean, he's
you're not as
one
afraid
of the top receivers in the game.
You're not as afraid to put that eighth guy in the box
to stop Arian Foster.
Stop the run.
I guess Ben Tate's out this week as
you're
well.
You're not afraid to put your corners out and those receivers by themselves.
No, but that's a good game because Arian Foster is healthy. NFL Offensive Player of the Week and Darren McFadden. I mean, two, maybe two of the top three backs in the league, and I'm saying Maurice is the other one. I mean, holy cow. And then you look at that defensive front for the Raiders.
They can
play.
Arizona at Minnesota, and Tampa Bay at San Francisco is not that bad.
Very good game. I saw Tampa up close. They're a good team.
San Francisco's hardball bad. Right now.
And they play hard. Both those teams play very – I'm impressed with Raheem Morris. I did not think that was going to work as him as head coach. But he has those guys that play fast, and they play hard. And Josh Freeman is the real deal.
Yeah, and San Francisco is an example of the team. You know, you can get this thing turned around. You can get stuff turned around in this league.
Quick.
Just by doing the right thing.
Alex Smith is still not good.
So they're getting it done with defense then, huh?
No, their defense is playing very well. I mean, that front that they have with Justin Smith and who's the left end? 91.
Which not their draft choice.
Hold
is
on,
the
I'm
going to
tell you right
Alden
now.
Smith?
Number 91, Ray McDonald, Florida guy. Sorry, guys, I'm not a Florida Gator fan, so I didn't know that. 6'3", 290, Justin Smith is just yoked up. I mean, the guys, he takes offensive linemen and throws them.
He's a pretty good player.
Oh, and then their nose tackles, you know, Sopawaga.
Yeah, Isaac Sopawaga.
6'2", 330, and I guarantee you his arms.
Doesn't he do curls?
The same size of my legs. Yeah, they curl 100-pound dumbbells or use like 300-pound dumbbells on.
300-pound dumbbells?
Yeah.
No,
200-pound dumbbells. Yeah. We were talking about that in the San Francisco game.
They do that, too?
For reps.
That would rip
it. Yeah, just like you, John.
Just like me.
That would rip every tendon in my arm if I tried to pick one up.
Yeah. How about San Diego, Denver?
That's where I am this week.
Oh, yeah? At least you're going home.
Yeah, I go see. But the positive thing is I get to see the family.
Yeah, you're going
to
eat well. All right, here we go. A couple of good games now. The Jets at New England.
I think the Jets are reeling.
Oh, they are. They've lost two in a row.
Yeah, but that's a good one just because it's, you know.
It's Rex.
It's a
Tom
rivalry.
Brady and.
That's one where
I could see,
Tony's
I could see
right.
The Patriots just
maybe the
running
Jets start a little
away.
Bit of a free fall.
I could see the Patriots running away and hiding on that game. I mean, just.
Well, remember, they got beat at home in the playoffs.
And
so
Tom Brady did not look like Tom Brady in that game
at all. The right now, the Jets can't stop the pass because they can't rush the passer.
Brian Thomas for the year.
The last 2 weeks have been exposed against the run, and Mark Sanchez has looked awful.
Five interceptions.
I've never
so
been
far
a big believer in Mark Sanchez.
Yeah, you've been consistent with that. Okay, Green Bay at Atlanta.
Outstanding game. Rematch of the divisional playoff game last year.
And a game Atlanta desperately needs.
But there's something up with Atlanta, though. They're not quite right.
I don't think they're quite right, and I don't think they have enough firepower to hang in there with Green Bay.
And then, who would have thought? But Chicago at Detroit's the Monday night game.
Great game. You know why it's a great game?
Because
how many times have we seen the Detroit Lions, you know, and Ndamukong Suh since last year?
Right.
I mean, how many opportunities have we gotten to watch the Lions? I mean, to me.
And it's a good matchup because the Bears are pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a division matchup and a game in which you get to watch Brian Urlacher, Ndamukong Suh.
Maybe the most exciting player on offense, Calvin Johnson.
Yeah. Calvin Johnson, Stafford, who, you know, we just don't get to see that team very much.
So I just,
and it's never boring to watch Cutler because he's either getting sacked
or
touchdown.
No, you never know.
So
yeah,
I just
mean, it'd be lights out.
The fun of it ran ahead to Thanksgiving Day because, I mean, how long has it been since Detroit's been worth
relevant
watching? They play Green Bay on Thanksgiving Day. Can't wait for that one.
That'll be a good one.
So there you go. There's your week in the National Football League, and we've got.
I'm kind of looking forward to. I'm looking very much forward to this game here because Blaine Gabbert was passed up by the Bengals in the first round.
The fourth pick.
Yeah. So
Jeff, how do they attack this defense?
Got a little chip. Maybe he got a little chip on his shoulder.
Where's the weakness in the? You've watched the coaches tape. Where's the weakness?
They don't
in the
have
bank?
A weakness. They're
Where
just,
do you attack them? Can you run the ball against them?
It's going to be tough. Cincinnati's good, man. Cincinnati is a very good defense. They play good team defense. And it's not like you can say, okay, we're going to attack this because that's our weakness.
The funny thing is going into the season, if you looked at the schedule,
right,
you said, oh, this is a win.
Yeah. And that's why you can't say that.
I can tell you where you need to attack their defense right now, okay, and that's by making sure that their rookie quarterback struggles. That's how you need to attack their defense.
He hasn't really struggled this year.
By just taking the ball away from Dalton.
Well, the other edge the Jaguars have, too, is they believe, and they've usually shown, that they can run on anybody. So this is going to be a game where they need to show that. And not at the expense of passing, but when they run, they need to run well.
Well, the weather may have something to do with that,
Andy Dalton, here's a crazy stat. and I think it's Andy Dalton, third down completion percentage is like 33 or 35. His third down completion percentage, terrible. You gotta win.
I would make him throw on third down.
Yeah, make him throw on third
down. Good call, John. That's why you should be in coaching.
It's in Cedric Benson now. That guy, he's running as hard as I've ever seen him run. You know, so the key to this game is stopping Cedric Benson and putting it all on Andy Dalton's shoulders. And the game plan's a mirror image for the Cincinnati Bengals. Stop Maurice Jones-Drew and put it all on Blaine Gabbert.
So it'll
again, that's what the Jaguars feel like they do well. I mean, they feel like they should stop any bad – I mean, you know, they had a bad running defense game last week, but they generally feel like that's their strength. You're playing into their hands if you do that.
All right, guys, that'll do it. Another Wednesday night in the can. Don't forget, we kick off things with the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show beginning at 10 a.m. on Sunday. Start at the pregame show for the network at 11, followed by kickoff at 1. The Winn-Dixie postgame show follows, and, of course, the Southern Ford Dealers Scoreboard Show with Cole and Marco is your opportunity to share your thoughts on the game. Thanks so much for joining us on Wednesday evening. We'll talk to you on Sunday as the Jaguars host the Cincinnati Bengals. Good night, everybody.
WOKV AM Jacksonville, WOKV FM.